those two verses are all about how there's nothing that can separate us from God's love.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading that one day. It was just like a light came on. And I had this thought that, well, if there was anything that I could do or that I could say that would cause God to stop loving me,
mm-hmm.
then he wouldn't be in control of his love. I would be. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Making History. My name is Brian.
And I'm Katie.
And we're the Hesses. And we're glad to be back.
We are.
And we're glad you're back.
Yeah. Welcome back.
Unless this is your first episode, then welcome to the podcast.
Yes. Welcome to our basement.
Welcome to our basement.
That made it really creepy.
Yeah, that was a little creepier.
We are recording in our basement, though.
Yeah, that's why she said that.
Yeah. That's so, not just like a weird
no
thing that I just
that's not like our tagline.
No.
Welcome to the basement.
Making History podcast. Welcome to our basement.
So we don't have a ton that happened this week.
We do not.
To catch up on.
No, it was a pretty normal week.
It was school. Pretty uneventful.
It was full, but also like nothing like exciting to talk about.
Nothing exciting.
Yeah.
We did have our water heater go out.
That is not exciting.
So that's one thing. Well, no. I said we don't have anything exciting, but we do have that going on. We don't have any hot water right now.
That is the opposite of exciting. Ugh.
So I took a cold shower this morning.
Yeah.
And I'm going to see how many days I can go.
Oof. Yeah. I took my shower last night. That made it sound like I'd take like one shower.
I took my shower.
I took my shower. I took a shower. Was that last night?
That was two nights ago.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Two nights ago. So that means I'm gonna have to take another one before the water heater gets fixed.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh yeah, that was like a really not fun way to discover that the water heater was broken, because I got in the shower totally unaware, thinking it's working perfectly, it was fine, and then I turn the faucet to hot.
Mm-hmm.
And I take like really hot showers. I'm one of those like classic women, like,
yeah,
the fire is, yeah, the fire. The water is like fire.
Yeah.
And so I had it up to my normal temperature and it started to get warm for like half of a second and then got colder. And I was like, oh no, no.
Because
that was like after a long day, I just wanted to get in the shower and relax and have that heat. And
yeah, didn't get it.
It was not that at all. I don't mind a cold shower when I'm like asking for it, but not when I want a hot shower. That was like the worst.
Yeah. I'm never okay with a cold shower.
I probably like one after working out or like being really hot and sweaty.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. But that's like, I don't know.
Still just not your jam.
No. So I woke up this morning and I think I probably laid in bed for like a half hour just trying to work up the nerve to get up, because I knew I needed a shower.
Yeah.
So it took me forever to get out of bed.
You're like, I'm going to get as warm as possible under the blanket so it'll last through the freezing cold shower.
Yeah. So that's probably the most eventful thing that happened, though, this week.
Yeah.
Not a lot else going on.
Mm-mm.
So because of that, we have a question that we're going to ask each other.
Yeah.
That sounded way more mysterious.
We have a question for us.
For us. So the question is, if you could go anywhere in the world, all expenses covered,
mm-hmm.
no worry about like money,
yep.
anything like that. If you could go on a vacation anywhere, where would you go?
Oof. So I'm answering first.
I can.
Okay. I mean, I have like multiple. So do you have one?
I have a few. If this were like a serious thing, I would probably do just a little bit more research.
Sure.
On the countries and the area.
Like if we were really going.
If we were really going.
Yeah, to and make it sure was the experience like, was worth
this is
it.
Happening.
Mm-hmm.
Narrow it down to one.
Yeah.
I would do just a little bit more research.
Yeah.
But initially, my thought is New Zealand.
Because
I've always wanted to go to New Zealand.
Yes. That is a really good one. Now mm-hmm. you made me want to add a fourth. But
that wasn't one of them.
It actually wasn't, shockingly.
Whoa.
Okay. And now I forgot about it, which is surprising because that's always been my like number one.
Yeah.
Well, for years not. And years. I guess not anymore. But yeah, New Zealand, getting to see where Lord of the Rings was filmed.
Yep. Go to Hobbiton, go to the Shire.
See the little Kiwi birds running around.
Yeah.
Those are so weird. Oh, yeah. That's a good one. Well, now I'm mad I forgot about it.
Well, it's too late.
Too late.
I picked it and it wasn't even in your top three. So let's hear yours.
Okay. So I think this is just a place that I really want to go like currently. I really want to go to Greece.
Yeah.
I just want to experience that classic, like, is it Santorini? The like,
yeah, I think
beautiful,
so.
Like all the buildings on the coast and the ocean right there where it's so like romantic feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is a huge one. And also Greek food. Come on.
Yeah.
I love Greek food. Yeah. So that's one. Another one, I would love to go and do like the classic beach vacation in those little houses that are like on the water.
Sure.
In like the Maldives.
Maldives. Yeah.
The beach cottages,
yeah.
Hut things. Those just look like a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And how fun would it be just to be able to like walk out and you're literally just like on the water.
Yeah.
So that would be fun.
Yep.
And then another one, I would love to go and do some hiking in the Alps.
Okay. Yeah.
It's just so breathtaking. It's so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I'm talking, I'm thinking of more questions or more places to go, but I will end it there.
We'll leave it there. So we have spent a couple episodes talking about responsibility,
mm-hmm.
in that responsibility means having the ability to respond,
yes.
to people, as opposed to people who do not have responsibility, do not have the ability to respond to people or events and circumstances. They only have the ability to react.
Mm-hmm.
And when all you have is the ability to react, then you are basically living as a slave to the emotions and the feelings that these circumstances and events and people are producing in you.
Yeah.
You don't have a lot of say in how you feel and how you act.
Mm-hmm.
You're just a reflection of what's happening around you.
Right. Yeah. So not only are you a slave to like your own emotions and feelings that just rise up at a moment's notice, you're also a bit of a slave to other people's emotions.
Sure.
Because when you're an irresponsible person, you typically, like you said, you mirror,
mm-hmm.
what's happening around you. So whatever, like if you were feeling upset and angry one day and I had no responsibility, no sense of responsibility, I would just do the exact same thing that you were doing.
Mm-hmm.
I would match your energy.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's often the trap that parents fall into with their kids.
Yes.
Because kids get emotionally escalated very quickly.
Yeah.
Very easily.
Mm-hmm.
And on the days when I am not feeling as equipped,
mm-hmm.
to be responsible for how I feel and how I act, regardless of what's going on.
Yeah.
Around me in my immediate circumstances. Then I will allow their emotional escalation to become mine.
Mm-hmm.
But in that scenario, they have more control over my behavior than I do.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's ultimately the problem.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's why typically tantrums last so long when there are parents who are unequipped to handle their own emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And like, or even if you are equipped and you're just having a bad day, you know, like we've been there, we've all been there, that like when your kid gets loud, especially when you're in public, this gets a lot harder.
Sure.
And that really shows like how good of a grip you've got on your responsibility.
Yeah.
But it's easy to just be like, I'm going to be louder. I'm going to be bigger. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be scarier than you're being right now.
Yep.
In order to attempt to control you.
Exactly. So when we talk about responsible people, when we talk about, and we've used the word powerful people,
mm-hmm.
that's what we mean. We mean people who are able to go through life not allowing everybody else to control their emotions and their behavior.
Yeah.
And that leads us into today's topic, which is self-control. And that's probably the greatest mark of a powerful person, of a responsible person, is that they have absolute self-control.
Mm-hmm.
And self-control, generally speaking, I think people have not an incorrect view of self-control as much as an incomplete view of self-control.
Okay. What do you mean?
I don't think that the way most people think about self-control is wrong as much as it's just not the full picture.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when people talk about self-control, having self-control, it is often talked about as like having the ability to just not do like the bad things that we're tempted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's not wrong.
Right. Yeah.
But to me, that just feels like a very incomplete picture.
Sure. It's like scratching the surface.
Yeah.
Of what the fullness of self-control really can be.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it is about that. But it's also, like we've been talking about, it is also about just having the ability to go through life knowing that it's your job to manage yourself. It's mm-hmm. your job to manage your emotions, your behavior, everything, and your hula hoop.
Yeah.
If this is your first episode, go back a couple episodes and start this little series over because this is all connected.
Right.
But we talked about the hula hoop, and everything in your hula hoop is yours to manage. Everything in my hula hoop is mine to manage.
Mm-hmm.
If I have self-control, I am going to take very seriously my responsibility for managing everything in my hula hoop.
Yeah.
And that's what powerful people understand, that it's not just about me managing what's mine, but it's also me not managing what's yours. And allowing you right. to manage what's yours.
Yes.
Whether you're capable or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you can manage your time and your resources, if you can manage your emotions and your behavior, mm-hmm. that's great. If right. you can't do that, it's not going to help you for me to step into your hula hoop and do that for you.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I can be there to help provide solutions and yeah. teach you and equip you.
Right.
But it's to equip you to do the things that you ought to do while I continue to do the things that I ought to do.
Exactly. And there may be some like temporary relief when you reach into other people's hula hoops, like for them, they're like, mm-hmm. oh, okay, my problems are getting solved for me.
Yeah.
But in the long run, you're just enabling that incorrect behavior and that incorrect way mm-hmm. of handling life in general, because yeah. you're showing them, hey, you actually don't have to be in control of yourself because I'm going to do it for you. And then you're creating that codependent
mm-hmm.
relationship that I think we've mentioned before that
yeah.
does not end up well for either side, because no. one person ends up just sucking the life out of the other person, and the other person is drained and becomes bitter and
yeah.
just mad that they are in that position when they actually probably put themselves there.
Yeah, just creates all around dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
So if we were to look for Bible verses about self-control.
Yeah.
There are two that I can think of that people would almost always go to.
Mm-hmm.
Galatians 5.
Yep.
Talking about the fruit of the Spirit.
Yep.
And the other one is 2 Timothy 1:7. God has not given you a spirit of fear, but mm-hmm. of power, love, mm-hmm. and self-control.
Yeah.
Depending on the translation, but most of them say self-control or self-discipline.
Mm-hmm.
Those are typically the two verses that people would turn to.
Yeah.
And that's great. But I have found another verse that has become my favorite verse with talking about self-control, mm-hmm. which is funny because it doesn't actually mention self-control
right.
anywhere in the verse.
The words.
Yep. But when you understand it, and this to me is, this verse is the like the epitome or the like the height of self-control.
Yeah,
this is the absolute peak of what self-control looks like. Mm-hmm. And this is really what we're aiming for
right.
as followers of Jesus.
Yeah.
So this is Romans 8, verses 38 and 39. For I am sure that neither death nor life, nor angels, nor rulers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor powers, nor height, nor depth, nor anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God in Christ Jesus our Lord.
Mm.
Those two verses are all about how there's nothing that can separate us from God's love.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading that one day. It was just like a light came on. And I had this thought that, well, if there was anything that I could do or that I could say that would cause God to stop loving me,
mm-hmm.
then he wouldn't be in control of his love. I would be.
Yeah.
But
wow.
because there's nothing that can separate us from his love,
mm-hmm.
I don't have the power to get him to stop loving me.
Right.
And that's what, that's like I said, that is the epitome of self-control.
Yeah, that's so good.
That he is in absolute control of his love.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't do or say anything that would get him to shut that love off towards me.
Right. No matter what you throw at him, he says, okay, but this is still my choice.
Mm-hmm.
I still choose to love you
yeah.
fully and completely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow. That's super powerful.
Yeah. And that's like what, as followers of Jesus, that is kind of the goal that we're moving towards.
Mm-hmm.
Because God loves unconditionally.
Yeah.
And he has called us to love like him.
Mm-hmm.
And that looks like loving other people unconditionally.
Mm-hmm.
And unconditional love looks like being able to say to everybody in your life, you can't do or say anything that would get me to stop loving you.
Yeah.
Because again, if somebody could make me stop loving them, I'm not the one in control of my love.
Right.
They are.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be completely dependent on this external source of control.
Yeah.
To get me to love people.
Right.
But again, it requires that they do the things that cause me to love them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's not really love.
Yeah. In that circumstance, if you're allowing people's behavior to dictate whether you're loving them or not, that's just a fleeting kindness at best. That is just not in any way true, real love. Because
mm-hmm.
love looks past what's going on and says, hey, I'm still here for you.
Yep.
I still love you. You're not going to be able to change how I see you, how I feel about you. No matter how mean you are, no matter how rude you are,
mm-hmm.
none of that matters.
Yeah.
Because this is who I am and this is what I'm going to be.
Yeah. And I've got a few other Bible verses that I'll pull up in a second and read about that. But I think one of the things that we need to be better at defining is what it means to love somebody.
Mm.
Because with all the polarization in the world today between like yeah. political beliefs, religious beliefs,
mm-hmm.
there's just such a broad spectrum. It's very polarizing.
Yeah.
Very dividing right now. And there
which is ironic, too. Sorry to interrupt, but okay. that love is polarizing because I think God's mm-hmm. intention with love is that it would be the most uniting thing.
Right. But
also,
it's because there's a disagreement on what it means to
exactly,
love.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's why we need to bring definition because right. there are some people that would say, like, Christians ought to love everybody,
mm-hmm.
and loving everybody means being accepting of
right.
every kind of lifestyle,
mm-hmm.
every kind of choice, that
yeah.
morality is relative, that I should be allowed to, using air quotes, I should be allowed to live my truth,
mm-hmm.
and you should be accepting of that no matter what it is.
Right, and that's loving me.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you read the Bible and you understand Jesus, it's like, okay, that's not what love is.
Yeah.
Because Jesus loved everybody, but he confronted the things that needed to be confronted in people.
Yes.
He confronted lifestyles.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take, for example, the woman that was caught in adultery.
Yeah.
And she was, you know, she was dragged out by the Pharisees and the scribes. And of course, they wanted to put Jesus to the test again.
Mm-hmm.
They just wanted to catch him doing or saying or teaching something that was, that
right.
they could deem blasphemous or heretical. And Jesus, he didn't condemn the woman, but he also didn't approve of her lifestyle.
Right.
He didn't.
He wasn't like, guys, it's okay.
Yeah.
Calm down. Just, like, she's fine.
She's just living her truth, guys.
Yeah.
He didn't say that. But again, he didn't approve of her lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't send her away saying, just go and just you do you.
Right. You're covered. Like,
yes.
Which obviously at that point, being covered by the blood was not applicable.
Right.
But yeah.
Yeah. But he didn't send her away saying, go live your truth. You do you.
Mm-hmm.
He sent her away saying, I don't condemn you, but go and sin no more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there are so many stories of Jesus like welcoming sinners into his life
mm-hmm.
and sharing meals with them and teaching them and sitting with them.
Right.
And the result was that time spent with Jesus caused sinners to stop wanting to sin.
Mm-hmm.
And so Jesus was not, he didn't approve or accept every lifestyle.
Yeah.
But he loved everybody. And so that for him looked like, I'm going to love you. I'm going to show you that I love you by spending time with you, by mm-hmm. investing in you.
Yeah.
And by teaching you a more excellent way to live.
Right. Not by shouting at you on the side of the road, hey, you're going to hell if you're doing all these things. Like,
right.
there are so many things that had good intent from the church of like, hey, we want to get the word in people's ears and faces. And, but it's gotten really out of hand with the hate that's snuck in there. That like hate is not going to drive somebody to the cross. Mm-hmm. Hate is not going to get somebody to the feet of Jesus.
Yeah.
Loving them, letting them know like, hey, like you are fully loved. You were created to be loved, to love and to be just consumed by love.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's going to get people at his feet.
Yeah.
Typically, you know, when you're living in sin, but to hear somebody tell you, hey, I see what you're doing. I know everything. I know every thought. I know every move, but I still love you.
Mm-hmm.
And showing them like, hey, here's a better way.
Yeah.
And I'm going to love you the whole way there.
Yeah. You know, the kindness of God leads to repentance.
Yes.
Scaring people into the kingdom has never been a tactic that works.
No, it does not.
Loving them and showing them kindness and welcoming them into the kingdom.
Right.
Before I move on, you said something that got me thinking. You mentioned how like sinners typically know that they're sinning.
Mm.
And like one of the ways you can tell that that's true is that people who are stuck in sin and they don't necessarily, because they don't have a relationship with Jesus, they don't necessarily have hope for things to change, that they could actually be transformed into a different type of person.
Yeah.
So what they'll do is they'll work really hard to normalize their sin.
Mm-hmm.
And because the mindset is, I'm doing this thing and this doesn't feel right, but if I can get other people doing it and we'll normalize it, and then it'll be just fine because we're all doing it together.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so that's one of the ways you can tell when people are trying to normalize really like evil lifestyles.
Yeah.
And again, you can't do it without Jesus.
Right.
So there's no hope. There's not even a thought of,
no,
I could be transformed into a person who lives a pure and holy lifestyle.
Right.
There's not a thought of that.
No.
Which is just why people need to be introduced to the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, let's get back to self-control. So this is Luke 6. I'm going to read 27 through 36. So this will be a little bit of a chunk. But I say to you who hear, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who abuse you. To one who strikes you on the cheek, offer the other also. And from the one who takes away your cloak, do not withhold your tunic either. Give to everyone who begs from you. And from anyone who takes away your goods, do not demand them back. And as you wish that others would do to you, do so to them. If you love those who love you, what benefit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who do good to you, what benefit is that to you? For even sinners do the same. And if you lend to those from whom you expect to receive, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners and get back the same amount. But love your enemies and do good and lend, expecting nothing in return. And your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High, for he is kind to the ungrateful and evil. Be merciful, even as your Father is merciful.
Mm.
And again, that just reiterates the idea that we're trying to drive home, that when you are a follower of Jesus and you learn from him and you like you look to him as an example and you study his life, you study the way he treated people with an understanding that this is who he's calling me to be, that you become a person who has the ability to go through life that way.
Yeah.
Loving your enemies, praying for those who persecute you.
Right.
That's not like, that is not default human behavior.
No.
That's just not how people function apart from like rebirth and transformation by the gospel.
Yeah.
But that's what we're called to.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're called to be. And that's what self-control looks like.
Right.
Being able to look at somebody who's persecuting you with eyes of love and thinking, I'm going to pray for you.
Yeah.
Because I know that this is not all that you can be.
Right. Yeah. Living in that just default state of forgiveness and mercy. Like, be merciful even as your Father is merciful. Like, that's unending.
Yeah.
You know, not depending on your circumstances, mm. like that mercy, his mercy that he has for us has no bounds.
Mm.
And so if we're called to live that way.
Yeah.
How far off the mark are we?
Right.
You know, and I feel like it's, you know, unfortunately way more obvious in the church sure. of how far we are from that as a whole body. There are, of course, people who are brilliant mm-hmm. at that and who live so mercifully and
yeah.
beautifully and love really well. But I think, I mean, it's way more common that you hear of people being wounded
yeah.
by mm-hmm. the body of Christ. And sure. I think a big part of that is because we are lacking in self-control
mm-hmm.
as a whole. We are lacking in that ability to love regardless of how other people are acting or how other people mm-hmm. are treating us. Because, you know, I think it's an automatic defense response of the world to like somebody who believes differently to mm-hmm. be like, ooh, nope, don't come near me. We can't be friends. You're probably going to judge me. You're probably going to hate on me. Like,
sure.
to just put up an automatic wall. And then if we return that, we're not acting any differently than the world is.
Mm-hmm.
And so as believers, like if we can practice that self-control and say like, hey, like it's okay. We can still be friends. We believe super differently. I'm going to love you
mm-hmm.
even though I completely disagree with how you're living. And me loving you is not saying like we mentioned before, like I approve of everything that you're doing. Love is not just approval.
Mm-hmm.
Love is that practicing that kindness, practicing that gentleness and that showing a better way
yeah.
of saying, hey, this is why I do what I do. You can say all day long, I'm going to do this because of these reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But when you shift that script to you should do this because of all these reasons.
Yeah.
Then you're reaching into other people's hula hoops.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you're right. I think one of the ways that Christians today, at least in the West, are in error is assuming that it's their job to make people loving.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's actually just your job to love people.
Yes.
And to let that love produce love in others.
Right.
And I think even a great verse to go off of with that is 1 John 4 something. I know it's in 1 John 4, but there's that verse, we love because he first loved us.
Mm.
And it's this concept that our capacity to love is set by our revelation of his love for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if I want to become a more loving person, that happens by discovering his love for me.
Mm-hmm.
And as I understand and believe how loved I am, it increases my capacity to love others.
Yeah, absolutely.
But again, that's often not the way people go about it. People right. go about it saying, like, you should be more loving.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, that's just not your job.
Right.
Is it? Yep. That's not your responsibility. Your yep. responsibility is to love people.
Mm-hmm.
My responsibility is to love people
mm-hmm.
and to allow love to do what it does.
Yeah.
But like me acting unloving, unkind, telling you that you're at fault for not loving the way you should.
Yeah.
Is just like totally unhelpful.
Right. Yeah. It's super hypocritical.
Yeah.
Like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's 1 John 4:9 for
okay.
anybody who wants to a quick look.
Great. Then you just have that one.
Sitting. Well, yeah, we did that in kids' church. That was one of our memory verses. So that's nice. one of the ones that's in there.
Yeah.
yep. Every now and then I'll remember a reference.
yep.
That is not my skill. Anyways, working on it. But yeah, if you are attempting to give something that you have not first been filled up with, you're not going to have any luck.
Yeah.
So that phrase, you can't pour from an empty cup.
Yeah. You can't give what you don't have.
Very, very real mm-hmm. in this situation. Like if you're trying to love somebody, but you have not allowed yourself to be loved first.
Mm-hmm.
You have not allowed the Lord to come in and show you how lovable you are, despite this long list of injustices that you have written up against yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Then you'll come to a roadblock really quickly.
Yeah.
And like, you may be able to, you know, I think we can be nice. We can be, we can be giving. We can have like little like glimpses of loving things that we give if we have not first allowed ourselves to be loved. But it's not going to be the true experience with love himself until we have experienced love himself ourselves. That was a very, lots of selves in there.
Selves and loves.
Selves and loves. But yeah, boils down to you have to let yourself be loved so that you can love.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as we can close with this, but as we pursue this lifestyle that we're talking about, a life in which I'm just totally powerful, you're totally powerful.
Yeah.
People can't make us stop loving them. We understand it's not their job to make us loving.
Yeah.
It's not our kids' job to make us kind. It's not their job to make us patient.
Yeah.
As we pursue that, the best way to go about that is to just look to the Father and look to Jesus.
Yeah.
And understand how they are. Get to know their character, get to know their nature, and then understand that that is who he's trying to make us. Right? Like Jesus came and modeled life in union with the Father, empowered by the Spirit.
Yeah.
So that he could say, this is what it looks like. Now do as I do.
Right. Yes. Right? Yeah. And that's not to say that it's that your life's going to be free from frustrations with people, that you're never going to get upset at somebody, that you're never going to be annoyed by something that somebody did. But it's in the face of those times continuing to choose love.
Yeah.
Instead of allowing your emotions to take over and reacting rather than responding.
Right.
It's constantly responding in love in the face of adversity, in the face of annoyance, in the face of a screaming toddler.
Right.
You know, whatever it may be, of just making that powerful choice. Say, hey, you're doing this. I'm still going to choose to be love for you.
Right. Yeah. Life with Jesus doesn't mean that life will be easy.
Yeah.
It just means that we'll be able to respond to the difficult and the hard and the painful things with the mind and the heart of Christ. Should we allow ourselves to be discipled by him?
Yeah.
Okay. Feels like a good spot to end.
That is good.
So if you are listening on any podcast platform, do us a favor. And if you have found any value in our content, please leave us a good review. And if you are watching this on YouTube, do us a favor and like and subscribe. That is a very small thing that helps in a very big way.
Indeed.
Great.
Awesome.
All right. Well, that's going to be it for this episode. Once again, my name is Brian.
And I'm Katie.
And we're making history. We'll see you next time.